This is Suno India production. You can now listen to all our episodes on our Android and iPhone app. Download it now.
Hi, this is Rakesh here. You might have heard me in some of the earlier episodes. I'm the editor of this podcast and co-founder of Suno India. We have started Climate Emergency as we strongly believe in the need to understand this complex issue and provide you with valuable insights and perspectives on this pressing issue. So, before we begin this episode on fast fashion, I want to inform you that we are making a few changes to make the episodes more interesting and informative for you. In the coming months, Climate Emergency will feature a mini-series on climate-based information supported by Czech Global Independent Media Response Fund. All our episodes will have a new segment called Climate Fact, where we talk about one climate fact every episode. We are adding a new segment where we talk about all the sustainable development goals we address in that episode. So, please listen till the end and let us know what you think about it. You can interact with us by downloading the Suno India app and leaving your comments or tweet to us. That's all from me. Over to our reporter, Sneha.
Buying clothes has never been easier. 80 billion items are manufactured every year. We buy clothes with changing seasons, at every festival for every other party, and let's not even talk about the wedding season and clothes. E-commerce and fast fashion have made our desire to own clothes for different occasions much easier. But then what's the problem?
The core of the problem is we probably haven't been able to understand the magnanimity or the quantum. I mean, it's the closest quantum of waste, no doubt. 74 lakh is a lot of waste.
When we were younger, we used to think about that one piece of clothing that had to be bought on Diwali. And honestly, I remember my parents saying that they had big families and their parents used to give some money to all their siblings to buy a pair of new clothes for Diwali. I really remember the elders in my family buying clothes like we all do. Clothes shopping used to be an occasional event, something that happened a few times a year when the seasons changed or when we outgrew what we had. But about 20 years ago, something changed. Clothes became cheaper, trends sped up, and shopping became a hobby. Fast fashion allows consumers to buy more, but they are wearing these garments less often and disposing them at an unprecedented rate. But what is fast fashion? Why is fast fashion so bad? And how exactly does it impact the people and the planet? And how many of us honestly think about the environmental cost incurred each time we buy that top or a t-shirt? Hi, I'm Sneha Richharya reporting for this episode of the Climate Emergency series. Today we are talking about fast fashion. Put simply, fast fashion is based on the idea of creating a false demand for fresh looks so that more clothes are produced for sale. Fast fashion is fast in a number of ways. The changes in fashion are fast, the rate of production is fast, the customer's decision to purchase is fast, delivery is fast, and the garments are worn fast, usually only a few times before being discarded permanently. The rise of fast fashion has had devastating consequences, but you may even ask your parents maybe, it was all too good to be true in the 80s. All these stores selling cool, trendy clothing you could buy with your loose change, wear a handful of times and then throw away. Suddenly, everyone could afford to dress like their favorite celebrity or wear the latest trends fresh, straight from the catwalk.
As an influencer, it's your job to follow the trend, make new trends, and as well as be the trend. And especially as a fashion influencer, you have to have whatever is new in the market in your wardrobe.
Purvi Chabra is a 23-year-old Instagram influencer who talks about how social media is driving this urge and creating a demand. To stay relevant online these days, you have to stay fashionable. Whether it be clothes, makeup, footwear, or any other product, companies too rely on influencers to help market their products to their targeted audience. Influencers help create desire, fueling this demand. This creates a full cycle. The influencers try to stay relevant by staying fashionable, and because all of us follow them, we also give in to that urge to buy more. Unknowingly, all of us together fall into that cycle.
Totally agree that fast fashion has become a trend these days. So I think staying relevant without a variety of clothing at hand is like not possible in the long run. Because, you know, as a fashion influencer, you just try to be the first one to tell the audience whatever is new or trendy. Otherwise, of course, you're going to lose all of your audience and people are not going to, you know, stay interested in your content because that's what people follow you for. And talking about Instagram, people always look for similar outfits, influencers, or maybe someone famous is wearing. So when we see ads or many Instagram pages with the trending clothes, we are just tempted to add it all right away in our cart, right?
Purvi is right. It all looked too good, but only till 2013, when the world had a reality check. When the Rana Plaza clothing manufacturing complex in Bangladesh collapsed, killing over 1,000 workers.
A garment factory has collapsed in Bangladesh, once again calling into question the safety standards at the factories. Rescuers are still desperately searching the rubble for survivors, but at least 87 people are known to have died. Hundreds of others were injured when the building collapsed.
8 people have been killed in a fire at a clothing factory in Bangladesh. Most of the workers at the facility in the industrial district of Dhaka had already gone home for the night. It took firefighters more than 3 hours to get the blaze under control.
That's when consumers really started questioning fast fashion and wondering the true human cost of those cheap t-shirts. Garment workers around the world are at the center of a human rights crisis, having been exploited, subjected to low wages, and forced to work in hazardous conditions. These workers are literally putting their lives in danger to produce low-cost clothing that you wear. What is clear is that major fashion companies are willing to make massive profits at the expense of garment workers all over the world. When an early wave of COVID-19 pandemic struck the world in March 2020, many major brands cancelled garment orders and refused to pay. Workers were left unpaid due to an estimated $40 billion in unpaid contracts. But before we get into having a sense of the magnanimity of this problem of textile waste generated by fast fashion industry, for starters, let us first understand how sustainability is being talked about, especially in the fashion industry. Ms. Apla Srivastav, who is an associate professor at the National Institute of Fashion Technology in Mumbai, tells us how the fashion schools, at least on an academic level, are talking about sustainability.
So talking about fashion education and sustainability, we educate our students about the macro and micro environments and their interdependence. We take them to craft clusters to uplift artisans, to help the craft sector, and encourage students to use craft resources and teach them about circular economy. We have dedicated subjects, and each subject contains information about sustainable products, sustainable concepts such as fair practices, craft upliftment, reducing carbon footprints, designing sustainable products using biomimicry, and so on.
I asked her about the challenges of sustainable fashion.
So, the price of sustainable materials is the first obstacle. If you are making a sustainable product, it will cost money at every stage. Customers will find these products to be more expensive. As a result, they will purchase less expensive versions of sustainable goods in plastic or any other synthetic material if they are unable to afford them. Second challenge is lack of knowledge or awareness. So educated people, educated means people who are responsible citizens, who are informed consumers, they should go for timeless classics. So they are not doing it. This is the second challenge. Third, I can say that the crisis of natural resources because of rapidly expanding population of India, which a sustainable industry needs, garment industry needs, is another challenge.
And in order to become more sellable, a lot of clothing brands are greenwashing their products, calling themselves green, sustainable, natural, biodegradable, zero waste, and all that sells. For example, on Earth Day 2021, H&M announced the launch of Loop Island. Put simply, this was an initiative to put the emphasis on recycling and reusing materials to reduce waste produced by the fashion industry. Their current goal is to be using 100% recycled materials in production by 2030. Sounds promising, but while H&M has made some strides towards circularity, this ultimately comes across as greenwashing. Recycling a few items and encouraging consumers to recycle or buy recycled items cannot make up for 3 billion garments that H&M produces every year. H&M needs to make more fundamental changes to its business model and take greater accountability for its actions. Fast fashion industry has evolved over time. The clothing industry is one of the worst contributors to pollution on Earth. The fashion industry produces about 53 million tons of fiber every year, 70% of which ends up in garbage dumps or is incinerated. Production of fiber is expected to reach 160 million tons by 2050, according to the Ellen MacArthur Foundation, a UK-based charitable organization working to promote circular economies. The numbers are staggering. According to an analysis by Business Insider, fashion production comprises 10% of the total global carbon emissions, as much as the European Union. It dries up water resources and pollutes rivers and streams, while 85% of all textiles go to dumps each year. But it would be useful to explore what exactly is driving this unsustainable behavior and what kind of impact it has on the environment. We have Atin Biswas with us today, who works on waste and is also a program director at Center for Science and Environment. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Sneha. Thanks for having me.
As we know, the speed at which the garments are produced, and also, you know, we are throwing more and more clothes, they are getting disposed of, and which means we are also creating massive textile waste. So can you explain what is probably the magnanimity of the waste that we produce? Can we begin talking about the problem of textile waste in India and what lies at the core of this problem?
All right. It's a very difficult question. Let me just start with that note. It's difficult because we, as a country, we do not know what is the quantum of textile waste that we were generating, right? And that is not just about textile waste. It equally holds true for many other waste streams. So as a research institute, this is what we do, and I lead the vertical that deals with solid waste. Now, we have many numbers from various sources, right? And some are estimation-based, some are kind of research-based, a research which has been done in a small catchment area. So the most reliable or the most credible sources tells us that the quantum of textile waste in our country, it goes up to roughly 74 lakh ton per year. Okay, and if you compare that to the total quantum of municipal solid waste, because textile waste also features in that waste stream, it accounts for roughly 1.3 to 1.4%, right? And then if I just break it down, this 74 lakh or 1.4% of textile waste in the overall waste value chain, roughly 51%, you can say 50% is basically the post-consumer waste, right? Which is basically, I have used a garment and then I have discarded it. So that is the kind of waste that I'm talking about. And then there is waste that is basically produced during manufacturing of the textile fabrics, which again is accounts for roughly 40 to 42%, and the remaining 7% is what we import from other countries.
This essentially means that import of clothes and other material adds up to the waste that is produced in the country and to the increasing carbon footprints. Indonesia, Malaysia, Vietnam, India, Taiwan, and Thailand are facing rapid increase in plastic waste imports, resulting in polluted waterways, fires, and illegal dumping. The US and other developed nations are overwhelming the global south with more trash than ever before. From January to August 2020, plastic waste exports to Asia spiked 32%, hitting a record high in August 2020, with a few poor countries receiving the most of it, according to a US export database of the Census Bureau.
Now, again, I'm reiterating that these are all estimates, as because we never had and we still don't have an inventory to estimate, scientifically estimate, or let's not use the word estimate, to kind of tell from an inventory that this is how much we have generated in last year or last couple of years. So I would say that we haven't been able to understand the scale of textile waste and the problem that it is taking us to. And to start with, if you want me to start with managing or looking at textile waste from a scientific point of view, to kind of, because unless we know the quantity, everything else basically falls out of place. You don't really know what is the scale of collection and transportation value chain that you need, or what is the design capacity of the industry where you want them to be treated or recycled. So every critical decision will depend on this number, and then we don't have an inventory as of now. So according to me, basically, that is what is the core of the problem right now.
Yes, it has been highlighted that there is even a problem of sample size as well as sample selection in all surveys around textile waste. There is an imperative need to revisit the numbers. We don't know the magnitude of waste that we produce. So is India really dealing with the textile waste problem at all? Atin explains.
Well, Sneha, if I have to answer your question in an absolute yes or no, I would say it's a no. Right, we are not dealing with textile waste problem the way we should. And then let me just connect my answer to some policy perspective. You know, in India, we have started talking about solid waste management, say since 2014, since we had the Swachh Bharat Mission Phase 1 launched. Actually, in India, we had the first legislation on solid waste in 2000, but that's a pretty old legislation, and there is a lot happened between 2000 and 2014. And then in 2016, we had the first set of legislation that there's a legislation which basically talks about the larger solid waste management issues, which cuts across more or less all the waste streams, and you can also find a little bit of mention with regard to textile waste. I'm talking about the solid waste management rules 2016.
The solid waste management rules 2016 highlight the duties of waste generator. It talks about collection and disposal of sanitary waste like diapers, sanitary pads, and other disposable items. It also gives directives like no person should throw, burn, or bury the solid waste generated by him on streets, open public spaces outside his premises, or in the drain or water bodies.
And the same year, we had a series of other rules. Just to name a few, we had a rule on plastic waste, we had a rule on construction and demolition waste, we had a rule on electronic waste, we had a rule on healthcare waste. But we didn't have a rule on managing textile waste. Now, if you compare the quantity of textile waste, as I've just shared with you a couple of minutes back, to the quantum of other waste streams, then you don't really find a reason why we still don't have a proper legislation to manage textile waste. Because the legislation basically triggers a lot of value chain, basically, which is mostly revolved around the industry. So once a legislation is out, you get a proper protocol which comes with a mandate for the local government to collect it, and then to industry, then start investing on the rest of the value chain, like collection, transportation, treatment, recycling, repurpose, whatever you call it. And the other reason that I can see clearly, which basically will keep coming in the discussions whatever questions you might have, is that we are unable to collect textile waste from source. So if I consider this 51% post-consumer waste, that is essentially coming from the households, right? So at the household level, the biggest problem that we have, and it's not only an India-specific problem, it's a global problem, is that our waste is collected in a mixed form, right? So you can easily understand if a textile waste or any waste for that matter is mixed with other stream of waste, it reduces the chances of getting it recycled. And then the only option that we are left with is basically to send it for co-processing or to kind of extract the inherent energy from it, right? So just to answer your question or to summarize the answer to your question, we urgently need a dedicated legislation to manage textile waste if we are looking at it as a problem, and if we recognize that a lot more needs to be done as compared to what we are doing right now.
In April 2022, a report titled Circular Textile and Apparel in India Policy Intervention Priorities and Ideas was released by the Ministry of Textiles. It mentions that the Indian textiles and apparel industry faces unprecedented challenges due to few structural weaknesses like highly fragmented industry, lack of product diversification, limited client base, and inefficient productivity compared to its competitors, and lack of supportive governance policies. Similarly, in a press release from the Ministry of Textiles dating 12th October 2022, the Textiles Committee of the Government of India declares entering into a cooperation agreement with the United Nations Environment Programme on mainstreaming sustainability and circularity in the textile sector. In order to, it says, and I quote, minimize the negative environmental impact of the Indian textile industry by promoting sustainable practices where these exist and mainstreaming knowledge of circular production best practices in the textile and apparel sector. From other countries, we know that the Australian government is acting on waste related to clothing textiles by funding a national clothing product stewardship scheme. The Australian Fashion Council is leading the development of the scheme. The scheme seeks to collect data on textile life cycle, reduce the amount of clothing sent to landfill, and improve clothing design and production to increase longevity, reuse, and recycling. To support a similar objective, the European Union and all its member states have put in place legislations that promote activities and products life cycle aimed at reducing the amount of waste generated, a report affiliated to the European Environment Agency says. Circular textile production is being seen as an answer to the India's textile waste problem. Atin points towards a complete overhauling of the current system of textile waste management.
See, textile waste is not a problem that we are dealing with or India is dealing with. So if I just put it in terms of some number, so India accounts for close to 9% of the global textile waste. Now, that is a lot for a single country to contribute, right? Now, if we are serious about considering textile waste from the lens of circularity, then I would say then it would require a complete overhauling of the current system of textile waste management, right? See, we need to understand what is the current mode of collection that we have for any waste for that matter. It's not only about textile waste. We talk a lot about segregation of waste at source. And again, it has a very strong connect with how the consumer behave to the waste, right? Or how the waste generator. And waste generator usually categorized in three different categories. One is the individual generator like the household. One is the institutional generator. And then one is the commercial generator. But then there is no real effort which has been made so far, and I honestly don't see such efforts being made anytime sooner, to kind of create a dedicated system for collection. And to be able to make that system work, you also need to reach out to the consumer, to the waste generator, that they should not mix their textile waste with other waste at source, because then that will jeopardize everything. But for the institution like an urban local body or a city government, I'm not really talking about the panchayats, because for me to think about a panchayat having a dedicated mechanism to collect textile waste is nothing but a distant dream, right? What we can do in the panchayats is basically explore and reinforce the existing informal mechanism of collecting and channelizing the textile waste to the right destination. But if I talk in terms of the ULBs, or the urban local bodies or the cities, then we definitely need a dedicated collection, transportation, and channelization of textile waste to the respective recycling industry. And as a practitioner, you can check other sources as well, Sneha, but I don't think that we even have an inventory anywhere to kind of understand that, okay, if we are generating 78 lakh ton of textile waste in India per year, then what is the total design capacity of all the recycling industry who has the potential to recycle textile waste and then convert them to fresh product? And then even if the textile waste is converted to a fresh product, so there are two different ways that it can be recycled into fresh product. One, that you recycle whatever existing waste that is coming to the industry, and then you blend the fresh product with a percentage of virgin material and a percentage of recycled material. Or you can simply recycle 100% of textile waste to kind of make fresh product. But in either of the cases, the consumer needs to be informed, right? So that education is largely missing right now. And probably one of the inherent reasons why it is missing right now is that there is no legislation, that therefore there is no mandate even on the local bodies to consider textile waste management as an independent stream of waste, which is not getting the required degree of attention right now. The other solution for circularity that I can propose, which is probably the need of the hour, is the extended producer responsibility, right? So for the listeners, EPR or extended producer responsibility is a law where the producer or the brand owners are held accountable for the waste that, for the products that they're introducing in the market. So right now we have EPR policy for plastic waste, for battery waste, for electronic waste, but not for textile waste. So what this essentially will mean that the manufacturers or the brand owners, so there's a distinct difference between the two, because a manufacturer who is manufacturing the fabric is not the company who is selling the product with their own branding. So they are selling the raw material to a company who are then selling it with their own brand. So in this case, both the entities are different, but as far as EPR is concerned, both are accountable to collect back the waste, or at least provide funding to the value chain who is assigned with the responsibility of collecting and transporting and channelizing the textile waste to the appropriate industry where it can be recycled. So EPR going forward, coupled with a dedicated law on textile waste management, can be a part of the answer to bring circularity in textile waste management. And then Indian consumer never really have been oriented about recycled textile products. I had the fortune of visiting other countries where I have seen recycled textile products, and where the consumers basically they are informed and they are kind of motivated or influenced to buy this product. And trust me, they look exactly as good as a new textile product, whatever we basically buy in our day-to-day life. And then there is need to kind of regulate the import of either fresh or used garment, which is currently booming right now. So India is more than self-reliant as far as textile production is concerned. But in India, there's a huge market for used garments, right? Definitely that is not what we as kind of affluent people, we prefer to buy. But there is a market. I mean, you visit any random city and you will find market where used textile garments are being sold. I would say that is a very good system. But since as a country, we are unable to manage our own waste, and then if you import additional textile garments from other countries and sell them in your, allow them to be sold in your country, we are basically adding up to the burden which we are struggling to manage as of now. So yes, circularity in textile, because textile waste has huge, huge economic potential, right? It has huge environmental, I would say environmental implication, because if we can put textile waste into circular economy, then definitely that would substantially reduce consumption of the natural resources in making those products, including water. And, you know, I haven't come across any specific regulation, or honestly, let me just acknowledge that I never really attempted to kind of speak to the colleagues in the pollution control boards, like what mechanism do they currently have to periodically check the effluents that is being discharged by the textile industries, and what are the chemical compositions, and whether it is safe to be discharged in an ecological flow, or what kind of chemicals are being used, whether those chemicals are certified, or whether those chemicals are being produced in informal industry. So a lot basically needs to be done if you are thinking about circularity in textile production, and you consider this to be an answer to the India's textile waste problem going forward. This is again, this is where basically textile waste has a lot of connection with plastics. So right now you must be aware that, you know, the PET bottles or polyethylene tetraphthalate, which is usually used for packaging beverage, right? Say soft drinks or, you know, packaged drinking water. So right now we are recycling 97% of PET bottles into textile fabrics. Now, the problem is that once a PET bottle is recycled into textile fabrics, it is no longer accounted as plastic waste. And then whatever little we have been able to understand so far, that use of such heavy quantum of polymer-based material in textile, it practically reduces the life of the product. And then the only option that we are left with for those material is to send them for an end-of-life disposal to an incineration-based technology like waste-to-energy or cement industry, where basically we burn them, right? So we need to understand the gravity of this problem. Now, I honestly don't know in the overall spectrum of textile waste, what is the percentage of textile waste which is mixed with some polymer-based material.
In the era of fast fashion, things are made quickly and for a fraction of the cost, but ends up being expensive for the environment. Today, textile industry is one of the biggest and most complicated polluting industries in the world. Large textile hubs in the country can produce up to 45,000 meters of fabric waste on a daily basis. But in the middle of this chaos, a Delhi-based purpose-driven brand, One for Blue, is playing a small but significant role in fighting the sea of textile waste. Monica Guerra, the co-founder of One for Blue, didn't want to be a part of this existing problem. Instead, she offered a much more redefined solution. You can also listen to Monica in an earlier podcast we recorded with her. I will add a link to the podcast in the description.
Basically, we work with pre-consumer cotton scraps. India is one of the largest exporters of cotton, including fabric and garments. When fabric is converted to garments, the cloth is flat laid and cut into relevant patterns. The parts that are unused account for shop floor waste. This is pre-consumer waste, in that it's waste but hasn't been used by anyone. It's still fresh. So these scraps get collected from several garment units and are then sorted by color. The fibers extracted, therefore, are pre-colored and do not need re-dyeing. These fibers are then blended with recycled PET fibers to make the yarn that's used for knitting the cloth that's used in our garments.
The idea of sustainability cannot be just enforced on a manufacturer, honestly. It also depends on customers to be conscious about their choices. With this, you might also ask, what can we do? Buying less is a first step. Try to fall back in love with the clothes you already own by styling them differently or even flipping them. Choosing well is a second step, and choosing a high-quality garment made of eco-friendly fabric is essential here. Finally, we should make it last. But there is more to it. Where do the poor and the disadvantaged lie in this conversation on conscious choice and styling? They lie in the dark. Several controversies in the past have led to disasters, taking the lives of thousands of poor manufacturing laborers. In the wake of such calamities, slow fashion has risen up as a movement against the large companies. Through the promotion of improved safety measures in higher quality groups, small businesses are attempting to counteract the damage done. Even the human health consequences of fast fashion have largely been missing from the discussions. The depth and breadth of social and environmental abuse in this industry warrants for its classification as an issue of global environmental justice. There is an emerging need for research that examines the adverse health outcomes associated with the fast fashion at each stage of the supply chain. Now that you know what buying that one extra t-shirt does to the planet, buy less.
To encourage the understanding of Sustainable Development Goals or SDGs, we thought, why not mention SDGs we cover in every episode? The SDGs, also known as the Global Goals, were adopted by the United Nations in 2015 as a universal call to action to end poverty, protect the planet, and ensure that by 2030, all people enjoy peace and prosperity. So in this episode, we spoke about SDG 8, which is decent work and economic growth, SDG 9, industry, innovation and infrastructure, SDG 12, responsible consumption and production, and SDG 13, climate action. We plan to talk about various SDGs we cover in episodes from now on. Please let us know what you think about it. Like I said earlier, we are starting a new segment called Climate Fact, where we introduce one climate fact in every episode till we launch our mini-series later this year. This week's climate fact.
Will fighting climate change by reducing our waste to landfills cause economic breakdown?
Climate action is not a budget buster or an economy breaker. Shifting to a green economy could yield a direct economic gain of $26 trillion through 2030 compared with business as usual case. A circular economy based on the principles of reduce, reuse and recycle could create around 6 million new jobs in recycling and waste management. Thank you for listening to this episode on climate emergency. We hope that it has provided you valuable insights and perspectives on this pressing issue. As we navigate the challenges of a changing climate, it is crucial that we stay informed and engaged in the conversation. We hope this episode can broaden your understanding of the complexities of climate change and the actions we can take to mitigate its effects. If you want to stay up to date on the latest developments and discussions on climate change, be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Suno India app. By doing so, you'll never miss an episode and you will be supporting our efforts to raise awareness and foster a more sustainable future. Let's continue to work together towards a more sustainable and equitable future. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode. You can now listen to all our episodes on our Android and iPhone app. Download it now.